Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started with our session. You all look amazing out there. I hope you feel amazing this morning. We've got a great hour in store for you. My name is Brooke Bass. I'm the SVP and Manager of Property Claims for Liberty Mutual's Global Retail Markets U.S. Business Unit, and I'll be your MC today. I'm thrilled to be here today playing a dual role to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and support this community, but also as a total fangirl. The Mass Conference for Women is a natural fit for Liberty Mutual. At Liberty, we believe that diversity is about all of us, and we know that inclusion requires all of us. I'm proud to say that Liberty Mutual was named a Forbes Best Employer for Women in 2018. We have a Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index score of 100. And we were also recently recognized by the National Association of Corporate Directors with the NACD NXT Award for having a board that is over 30% women. We are so very proud to be a partner of the Mass Conference for Women. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make a mark in and for your companies and your communities. Thank you for being here today for this breakout session, Your Personal Best, Winning the Marathon of Life. We have an amazing hour in store for you. And now I'm excited to introduce our speakers, Linda Henry and Des Linden. Their full bios are in your handouts, and as you can tell, we have some amazingly accomplished women on stage. Linda is the managing director of the Boston Globe and Stat News. She is a co-founder and chair of Hub Week, a civic collaboration between the Boston Globe, Harvard University, Mass General Hospital, and MIT that explores the future being built at the intersection of art, science, and technology. She is a community activist and philanthropist, serving in leadership roles for the Red Sox Foundation, the Liverpool Football Fan Foundation, Football Club Foundation. Personally, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'll let that slide. The Boston Globe Foundation and the John W. Henry Family Foundation. Henry earned a BS from Babson College and a master's degree from MIT. And Des Linden, she braved headwinds and torrential rain to become the first U.S. women's champion at the Boston Marathon since 1985. Her win this past April, yep, let's give that up. Her win this past April was one for the record books as she bested the field in the worst conditions in race history. She is also a two-time U.S. Olympic marathoner and finished seventh at the Rio Olympic Games. She attended Arizona State University, where she was an All-American in both cross-country and track. In 2011, Linden wowed the marathon world with her near win at Boston. Her runner-up finish set an all-time U.S. record on the course and made her the third fastest American ever at the time. And in 2015, the Boston Marathon featured a really strong international field and the top three U.S. marathoners. And Des was the top American woman with a fourth-place finish, less than 45 seconds from the win. In addition to her marathon accomplishments, she has also earned a silver medal at the 2015 Pan Am Games in the 10,000 meter. Please put your hands together and welcome Linda and Des.
Thank you all so much for joining this session. I am so excited about this conversation. In part, I'm sure that a lot of you are like me, a hack runner, where you occasionally put on the gear and you go out and you run. And so then sitting next to an elite pro runner is an incredibly humbling experience. So thank you, Des, for joining, and welcome back to Boston.
My pleasure. Excited to be here.
So when you first started running, it was not an instant click. It wasn't something you loved.
No. It's the story that people don't recognize. You see the pinnacle and you go, oh, she must be a natural. I always remember and equate getting into running with my parents' New Year's resolution. Let's go out to the track. Let's do laps. And me being like, that looks like the worst thing in the world. I don't understand what you're doing. That looks boring. I was five at the time. So it's a lot of things I didn't understand. And then later in life, I realized that they were doing it wrong. You could compete. Like, they were just going in circles for fitness, which you could actually win, like, if you did track and field. So I was like, Mom and Dad, you were just doing it wrong. And I fell in love with competing, and that's really how I got into the sport. I loved racing, I loved training hard and testing myself, but going out for a regular run and training, that did not click for many, many years, and I'm almost embarrassed to tell you when.
You have to tell us when.
Well, it's jumping way ahead, but in 2012, wow, made the Olympic team, had a stress fracture in my femur. I'm giving all the secrets away. But and it was then that running was really taken away from me, and it was a pivotal moment. Do I want to keep doing this? And this was my career. Am I done? And it was all kind of on the line. Like, if you want to do this, it's going to be way different than training every day and competing and testing yourself. You're going to have to learn to love the process of running and not just competing. And so it took me until then, when it was taken away, it's like, okay, get back into it slowly. Be happy with running 10 minutes. Be happy with running 5 miles. And that's when I kind of fell in love with the process of running.
So you were at Arizona State, and you had an incredible coach there. Tell us about your being a college student athlete.
Yeah, I think that's was a really great time for me. I loved being a student athlete, and there, you know, it's different than being a professional athlete, and you see a lot of people have some really incredible performances, and you wonder what the rest of their life is like, because you go, I don't think I could train hard enough to get that done. I went to Arizona State, so social scene was like, woo! And I really embraced that, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. Had a great time in college. I finished 2 degrees, religious studies and psychology, and nothing incredible. I knew I had to run fast if I wanted to have a job right away. And I felt like I really balanced it all and had an incredible experience there versus just being singly focused and I'm an athlete, not a student athlete. And so I feel like I really maximized my time there and had a great college experience that I wouldn't look back on and say, wow, I wish I had focused more on running. I could have been a better runner at that period. I was very happy with being an All-American and being a pretty good runner, a pretty good student, and having a pretty fun time.
And it's different becoming an elite runner than it is from other professional athletes, because you're not recruited to a team.
Right.
You know, a lot of athletes are, you know, their decision is made as to whether or not they're professional based on whether or not somebody mm-hmm. recruits them. As a professional runner, it's a different path.
It is a little different, and usually you go out and you find your agent and they pair you up with a company and you look at different contracts and decide where you want to go and what's best. For me, because I wasn't the superstar having these fantastic performances in college, I had to kind of look around for a developmental group, which is basically kind of supporting people on the cusp, and here's free housing, we can give you a job, and if you run well, you can start, there's incentives along the way, but it wasn't really a guarantee that you were going to be a professional and make a living from it. And that was, for me, joining Hanson's Brooks out in Michigan and being partnered with Brooks from the beginning and working with two coaches, the Hanson's brothers. So it was a group that helped you get to the next level at a different rate than those guys in college who had just achieved already.
And so you made, that was a bold decision to say, okay, I love running. Did you love it?
I loved competing.
You loved competing.
Loved competing.
And you knew that you had the commitment and the ability to work incredibly hard in it. Mm-hmm. And it's a risk. Instead of going the traditional path of getting a job and working for somebody else, you're essentially an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And your company is yourself.
Yes.
And your brand and your ability to get sponsorships. So you had to have an incredible belief in yourself when you were 21, 22 years old.
Yeah, there was nothing more difficult than getting the degree, heading home, and your parents say, well, what's next? Where's the job? And you say, I'm going to be a professional runner. And they're like, that's not real. And you're like, maybe. We're going to find out. But I knew that my attention to the sport in college was pretty thin, and it was, you know, it was across all these different things, and it wasn't totally dialed on running. And I thought, I've done pretty well. I've competed with people and trained with people who, you know, I'm right there, I'm working out with NCAA champions, and I think I can be there if maybe I just put a little more focus and time into it. And so for me, it was worth the risk of answering that what if question. You know, I mean, I felt like I had the ability, and if I just put in a little bit more time, maybe I could do something special. And I would hate in 10 years to look back and go, what if? I've seen Amy Hastings become a two-time Olympian. I've seen Victoria Jackson win an NCAA championship and run for Nike. And what if I had done it? And so I wanted to answer that question.
And I love the entrepreneurial spirit and the self-determination that you had. And I mean, there's nothing like sports in terms of a meritocracy. You know, nothing else matters in terms of what advantages you may have had growing up or not growing up, or who your family is, or anything else. All that matters is you and the work that you've put in. And I had a very frustrated track coach in high school that was very patient with me, who said, you don't win at the race, you win at the practice. You know, it's in the practices where you're winning. And so in 2005 is when you took this leap, this entrepreneurial leap in yourself as a company, as a brand, as a professional. Mm-hmm. And your first Boston Marathon was just 2 years later in 2007.
Correct.
Can you tell us about that race?
Yeah. I was pretty young for a marathoner. And my whole thing in track and field was like, I love competing. I'm a 1,500 meter runner. And coach was like, no, you're actually a 10K runner. It's like, that's too far. Eventually I did it, and I enjoyed it, and I had fun, and it opened up the door to go to this post-collegiate group. And they're like, hey, we're a marathon program. And I was like, that's too far. I got into the marathon. And so for me, it was kind of learning to get out of my own way. Like, don't put any labels on yourself. Be open to the idea that you can be anything you want to be and give yourself a chance at this other new thing. And so I watched some teammates do the marathon, and the experience was incredible. They went from runners, and then they covered 26.2 miles on race day, and they were marathoners. And we have very rare opportunities as you're an adult to achieve something new and become something different. And it's like, I want to be a marathoner. So I signed up for this little Boston Marathon. And prior to this year, I think it was probably the worst conditions in race history in 2007. It was the headwinds, the nor'easter, like maybe we're canceling it, maybe we aren't, we don't know. And they ran it, and I ran it, and I loved every step of it. I loved it. And, the crowds were sparse because it was pouring rain, and most people are miserable, like, it's cold, it's horrible, and I was like, this is my event. I love this. I'm doing this forever.
And in 2007, you came in 19th, mm-hmm. and your time was 2 hours and 37 minutes for your first marathon, mm-hmm. which is just incredible. And so people weren't expecting you to, at that point, right? This was your debut.
Yeah.
You kept at it. This was your first taste, and then you kept going. Can you talk to us about your career after 2007?
Yeah, I've had just the highest of highs and lowest of lows in Boston, so it's all very fitting. But 2007, debuted, loved it, loved the training, loved the process, loved the journey. I'm a marathoner. This is great. And 2008, the Olympic trials were here, which wasn't run in the Boston Marathon, but it was the day before. And things had gone really well. I was like, it's my second marathon ever, but I'm making this team. I'm going to be an Olympian. Dreams come true. And ran a great race at mile 22, I believe. I'm 8 seconds back from third place. Top three make the Olympics. I'm running her down. I'm like, I got this. But I'm totally inexperienced. And how many of you have run a marathon? How many of you hit the wall in a marathon? Yeah, those are real. That happens. And I hit the wall, and I just, it was like an extra 40 seconds a mile from there. It was the longest 6 miles of my life, the last miles. And I was devastated. I really thought I was making that team. And most people, well, that's not true. A lot of people would say, I'm never doing that again. I hated it. I'm done with the marathon. And I looked at it like, this race, there's so many moving parts to it, and it's just this big puzzle, and there's 26.2 miles where you can make adjustments and tweak things, and it was like, I want to figure this out. And so my next goal was obviously to get on that Olympic team in 2012. And it's weird to think about things in four-year blocks, but it was probably 40 minutes after the race, I was like, how do we get better? How do I make 2012? And I know it's a long time, but let's get ready for that. And so it was kind of onward, upward from there, and just really figuring out the event. Had a really great run in 2011 where I got it almost right.
So in 2011, you came in second place by 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And they say like the unhappiest person is a person who comes in second place because you're that close.
Yeah.
But in your preparation for that race, you've talked about how you really visualize. You know, we read about how we're supposed to visualize completing something. We're supposed to visualize us giving that amazing presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And you visualized yourself as the champion for that whole thing. Talk to us about your mental strategy.
Yeah. I certainly wasn't a favorite in 2011. There was a great field that lined up, but I just felt like I was really ready for this breakthrough. Last time I had felt that way was in 2008. So it's always a big risk, but training was going great, and it was the thing where you act as if you are the thing you're trying to become. And I went into every day, what does a Boston Marathon champion do? How do they eat? How do they train? How do they recover? Am I doing massage right? And I pictured this every day, you know, for several months, and it was just so real. And we got out there on race day, and things just unfolded exactly how I had pictured for months and months and months, up until the last 200 meters. So I crossed the line second, and the running world was like, wow, you should be thrilled. This is amazing. It's a huge breakthrough. Because I hadn't done anything on that stage or at that level before. And I'm like, frowny face, like pissed off, and like, what's wrong with her? And like, this is the first time in months that I haven't been the Boston Marathon champion. And it was like, no, that's my laurel wreath. Like, it was processing this thing. But you know, you get over the frustration and you walk away a significantly better person. You bring that attitude and that energy and those, you know, values to every day for months and months and months, and you become a better runner, you become a better person, because that's what it takes to be great. And so I feel like that's something I try to do every time, whether I win or lose, I'm getting better as a human, I hope.
And it's such an interesting, you know, the marathon, if you're further away from the sport, it seems pretty straightforward, but what's amazing when looking through your record is that, you know, your time was 2:22 in 2011, and that was second place. And in 2014, you were 2 minutes and 2 hours and 23 minutes, and you came in 10th place. And but to go back to the visualization, you visualized this and to sort of propel yourself until you knew what to expect. You were prepared, but that was, you kept that to yourself, mm-hmm. right? You were the unexpected. You were the dark horse in a lot of ways. People didn't expect this of you. You changed strategies at that point, and you started to be more, you started to put out there more what your intentions were, that you were in it to win it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this whole underdog role was really, really great, and even when I say it now, I think I can win. People don't necessarily believe me, but it was held very close to my chest in 11, and, you know, it was like a really great chance to shock people and surprise people. And after that, it was like, I know it's there. They should know it's there. I'm going to be very open about my goals and what I intend to do here. And my goal was to win a marathon. And so every time I line up, you know, that's how I sell myself. I'm here to win. I'm going to compete hard, and I've got what it takes. And I think sometimes putting that out there just holds you more accountable. You try to be a little bit better in your preparation. You know, the world's watching, all eyes on you, and you want to back it up. And I just felt like it was one more way for me to work really hard and not just settle back into this, well, people will be really thrilled if I'm top three or top five. It was like, no, I want the expectation. It's for me, the expectation is to win, and I, you know, I want everyone else to hold me to that too, because I think it's just going to make me better.
In 2014, as mentioned, you came in 10th. 2015, your time was longer than in 2014 by 2 minutes, and you came in fourth place. 2017, your time was about the same. You also came in fourth place. And through all of this, you kept going.
Yeah.
You kept going, you kept training, you varied up your training, mm-hmm. you kept trying different things. You went to Kenya mm-hmm. for a long time to train there. Can you talk to us about why you did that? Why did you feel like you had to change it up?
Yeah. Kenya specifically was coming off this injury in 2012 after the games, where it was like, I think I need to be less result-oriented and more process-oriented and really learn to love what I'm doing. And it just seemed like a really great way to go and be in a culture and with people who really appreciate the run. And, you know, obviously their professional runners are fantastic, but being out in E10 Kenya, you wake up at 6 in the morning and everybody's running. And the little kids will go and run with you as long as they can during your run. And they don't have shoes on. They're, you know, just in their jean shorts and like a t-shirt, and they're running with you for way too long. It's a little intimidating. You're like, come on, guys. You've been with me for 3 miles. But it's just, that's how they grow up, and they love the run. And honestly, most people aren't going to make it professionally, but they're still out there doing it. And it was a new way to appreciate what I was doing. And that was a thing that really, I think that was a big part of the shift from loving competing to learning to love the run. And so that went a long way moving forward. And it was a trip that a lot of people were like, what are you thinking? And it's like, absolutely worth it, 100%. I wouldn't take that out of my story for a second.
Will you talk to us about your next Olympic, where, you know, the first Olympics was a very difficult experience because of injury. Tell us about your next Olympic experience.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, I think slowly building back to fitness and getting myself ready for 2016 was a challenge the whole way. And there's never a guarantee you're going to make an Olympic team. Our marathon squad in the U.S. and the women's side specifically is just getting better and deeper and stronger. So you drop out of 2012 and you go, man, it's just going to be 10 times harder to make the team. And there's no guarantee that I'm going to get there. So making that team was huge, and it was, that's could be a career, definitely one of the top moments that I'm proud of, because a lot of people would have just quit. You know, it's 4 more years and you've already made the team and so on and so forth. But it meant a lot to me to get back on that team and ultimately to finish the marathon in Rio. And it sounds like a silly goal. I mean, the A goal is to get the medal and be on the podium, and that's obviously super important for the games, but it was a lot of value for me in just getting across the finish line, because it was something that I hadn't done before. So I was probably the happiest 7th place finisher ever. I prepared like I, you know, was gonna medal or I could medal. I had the ability. I did everything I could to have the best race possible, but I was also equally thrilled just to cross the finish line there.
After 2000, am I cut off? Can you hear me?
Do you want?
Am I on? No. Can you repeat my question?
Sure.
So after 2016, you took a break.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to?
Yeah. So after 2016, I took a little bit of a break, and actually, I ran Boston in the early 17, because that was a race that just really gets me fired up and excited. And so it was easy transition. I think there's this post-Olympic lull, and like you just lose your momentum. It's, you build up for 4 years.
It's your dream. Is this on too? No? They just don't. This isn't on either. But doing
I'm on an island.
But being on the Olympics was your dream, and you achieved your dream.
Yes. I mean, being on the Olympic team was lifelong dream come true. And you know, there's this thing where you complete that moment and you have that moment, and it's like, what's next? Why should I be motivated? What am I doing this for? And we think in 4-year cycles for sure. And for me, Boston was the easy next transition. It kind of was like, okay, I'm gonna use this momentum and I'm gonna go into Boston and it's gonna be fine. And I did, I ran pretty well in Boston 17. I was 4th, and I think that's when that post-Olympic fatigue kind of hit me. And it was like, I tried to carry it through, but you know, I dreamed of winning Boston for a long time. It felt like it was getting further away than ever before. And I just felt like running had become a chore, like trying to win this big race and trying to medal at the games, and just feeling I was coming up short across the board, and it just started feeling a lot like a chore for me.
And it was really, what's so interesting is that you took 5 months off, which is a huge amount of time for any of us who consider taking a step back from our career. If we're taking a step back to have a child, to just sort of regroup, to take care of a parent, to figure out what we really want to do, to take 5 months off of being one of the best in the world at running is an incredible risk. And it shows also the faith that you had in yourself, that you had, that you could do it again, that you could build it back up again.
Yeah, I don't think I had it at the time, to be totally honest. I just thought, let me see if I want to rebuild. You know, do I have that passion, or will I be really comfortable like not running? And I took this long break, and just if I felt like it, I would go run a couple miles, but I wasn't training by any means, and I wanted to know if it still meant something to me. And I've been running for years. I started playing soccer when I was 5. I have plenty of miles in the bank. Getting in shape is really hard. Once you're in shape, it's fantastic, and it sticks in your body for a very long time. So for me, I didn't think I could go another Olympic cycle at the pace I was on and in the mental state I was with the sport. So it seemed like, let's just try this. Let's take a break. Have faith in what you've done over many, many years. And if you want to come back, it's still there. If you don't, maybe it's time to find the next thing.
And this is why it is just such a perfect movie arc, your adventure, because this five-month break came before the 2018 marathon. And so you decide to build up. I want to, before we go into the specifics of the 2018 marathon, I want to talk about your relationship with your colleagues that you have, because there are other elite women that you run with, that you train with, but you also compete with for the final prize. And so, you know, one of the remarkable stories that came out of the 18 marathon was you and Miss Flanagan. Can you talk to us about your relationship with her and what happened that day?
Yeah, mortal enemies. she's someone I've looked up to for forever. She was the collegiate that was a superstar, and you're like, wow, I want to be like her one day. And she did it in different distances, and we eventually kind of met up in the marathon, and just I have a ton of respect for her. And we've been on Olympic teams together and have competed together, and, you know, we do compete, and we want to be the best, but we also really recognize how hard it is. It's hard to get to the top. It's hard to win a major marathon. It's hard to get to the Olympics. And in 2012, she was one of the people who reached out to me when I had an injury and, you know, heal up, get well. It's just very supportive if there's anything I can do, so on and so forth. And I think there's just a ton of respect in the sport because we get how hard everyone's working. And so that's always been there. I, in all honesty, we're not great friends. I couldn't sit down and have a meal with her because I don't think we would have anything to talk about.
Could
to be honest,
for an hour like this,
absolutely not. but I think she's great, and we just are into totally different things, and that's fine too. But as competitors and on the course, there's just a lot of respect.
And so, you two are running together in 2018, and the conditions are horrible. The Boston Globe, which is always finding that really triple, that said it was the worst conditions ever since like the 70s for a race. And you started that day and you didn't think that this was your race. And again, this has been this dream of yours, and you had done it 6 times before. This was your seventh?
This was my sixth.
Your sixth time running Boston. It's a horrendous day. People are dropping out and you two are running together.
Yeah, it was the early miles. Sometimes we get ahead of ourselves, but I didn't feel great, and I didn't think it was a very sustainable pace for the entire race, and the conditions were so bad that I was 34 at the time, and it's like I only have a couple more marathons in my career where I can really go to the well and run great, and if I go to the well today, how long is the recovery from this going to be? Because it was just so bad out. And I wasn't sure that I wanted to risk that effort on that day, which is kind of funny in hindsight. And so I nudged her and I said, hey, I don't feel great today. I'm probably going to drop out. Let me know if you need anything. And very kind, she actually grabs my arms and she's like, are you hurt? Are you okay? And I'm like, no, I don't feel great right now. So if you need anything, let me know.
And she stopped to go to the bathroom midway through the race, and you waited for her.
So several miles down the road, or right around halfway, she nudges me back, and she says, I have to go to the bathroom. Do you think I should go? And I said, do you think it's going to get any better? And she said, I'm going to go. And I was like, I'll try to slow down the pace up front. And if not, I will help you get back to the group. So it was the quickest bathroom stop I've ever seen. I'm not even sure she had to go. I think she just wanted relief from the rain, to be honest. And so I just basically cut the work in half. So she ran up to me, and then we worked together to get back to the group. And I don't know, you know, it's this story that's really great, and I don't know if I'd been feeling great, if I would have been like, see ya, or, you know, but it worked out for both of us. I mean, there was so much hope in the American field this year, and we just had these great runners. It felt like our year, and I wanted us all to be in there to have the numbers to compete up front. It's a numbers game. Like, the more people you have in the race late, the better your odds. And, like, let's all be there. And her going to the bathroom didn't tactically make it a good time to run hard. It was still windy. We still had a long way to go. So it didn't really take anything away from my day to just help her out a little bit. And, again, like, the people who went because she went to the bathroom, such a reactionary race tactic. Like, that was never in your game plan. You know, it just didn't make sense. So I was happy to help her out.
And that it's just amazing because, you know, in business, when you are competing and, you know, you are competing in a very obvious, like, there is one winner. And this is a woman who is your closest competitor. You know, she is your peer in every sense of the world, word. And at that moment, you chose to help her succeed, even and in the end, that sort of helped you. So there's just a really beautiful story and business connection there, where all of us, when even though we're competing for that top job, for that promotion, or whatever it is, that you still were a colleague in the moment when it most mattered to her. So that was just another really beautiful thing that came out. So okay, I've been dragging it out. You won.
I did.
And what's amazing is that it was not your best time.
No, I mean, conditions, no one was running fast. It was probably the slowest time in, I don't know, race history. I'm not even sure. But it doesn't matter because I still got the medal.
You won. Other people quit. And That moment when you did it, this is something that you have tried and come up short so many times, and you never gave up, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You won.
Sounds good.
And talk to us about that and how you celebrate it. And then I want to get into how do you, you know, we were talking before we came on stage about how what happens when you achieve the thing that you've worked so hard for. Is that a motivating force, or is it unmotivating? Or is it, how do you sort of keep pushing that goal out?
Yeah, I'm going to skip how did I celebrate, because you guys don't want to know.
I know. All sneaker and champagne.
That's right. Delicious. And I don't regret it at all. I did drink champagne out of a shoe. It's called a shoey, and you celebrate. And you have to get Brooks Running some love, so I got him on the video, and that's how I celebrated.
Well, you've been partner. Well, I'm going to put in the pin in that next thing,
yeah.
Because you've been partners with Brooks for 13 years, and there was a really interesting partnership there, where there was loyalty both ways. There was loyalty that they had to you when you were coming up, and then there was loyalty you had back to them once you achieved this incredible accomplishment as being Olympian as well as
right.
marathon winner.
Yeah, there's always times and opportunities to make moves, and you know, there's a lot of really big brands out there that have a nice shiny price tag for a contract, and it's great, but where do you fit in this big company? You know, if I do something stand out in a different shoe, does it matter? Brooks does running and running only, and so they've always understood how to make a contract to allow a runner to develop, and you know, it was probably not a lot of other companies that would have said, hey, we get that you're taking 5 months off. We just hope you come back and stick with it, you know, through the rest of the terms. And so it was a no-brainer for me all along the way. These guys get the development process. They get the ups and downs of the sport. And it was really cool for me to win that race in their product. And they're super thrilled, and it's reciprocated because they do running, and this is the biggest thing in running right now. So they can market that and do whatever they would like with that. And again, it just builds my relationship with the brand and helps us grow together. So it's could not be happier about that relationship.
So back to after you win, after you achieve this thing that you've worked your entire adult life for,
mm-hmm.
What is your motivation at this point?
Yeah, it's a really tricky question. You know, I ran New York recently, and I haven't done much there, so it was go and compete somewhere else. You know, when you come back to Boston, is it like, I really want to win two times? Like, that's the goal. Is it, you know, I'm not sure yet. I mean, I love competing here, and if I'm able and I have the ability to compete well, I think I'll keep coming back if they keep inviting me. So I see that. I see myself running here many times. But it is a balance too, because there's all these new opportunities, and you know, the whole point was to have a professional running career, and that now entails more things, more sponsorship opportunities, more speaking engagements. How do those fit in with your training? And so it's totally new place I'm at, and I'm trying to balance it all. Which is great because I have a lot of practice based on my college experience. Full circle. Full circle, baby.
amongst the many things that's been written about you was that you, despite being an elite professional athlete, that you've always maintained this work-life balance, probably not as well balanced as when you were in college, but you've balanced it with a lot of other interests.
Yeah, I think being human is a big part of why I can enjoy this and do well, and longevity is so important in the marathon. You're going to have your best years in your early to mid-30s, and if I had just been single-focused, and not to say that I'm doing wild stuff all the time, most ever, but if I had been just so singularly focused and not had any fun and not had interests outside of running, I would be burnt out by now. But no doubt about it, 100%, I would be doing something else. So
something that, you know, again, that's another area that translates really well to the professional working world, the non-running world, where having that work-life balance that is a fiction for a lot of us at certain periods, but just having those other things outside of your work, outside of your passion that keep you human, that keep you grounded, that when you have a bad day at
right.
work, you still are a whole person.
Your whole being can't be tied on results or a meeting or a project. You have to exist outside of that stuff.
And for you being one of the top runners in the world, to be one of the top professional elite runners in the world, to still maintain that balance. And can you share some of the ways that you, some of your outside interests that you balance with?
Yeah, I'm pretty notorious for putting a massive vacation at the end of a big marathon. So after the trials, I went to Bali for 2 weeks, and it was like, we're either going to celebrate or forget the whole thing. And Bali is a great place to do that, on the beach with the Mai Tai or whatever the drink you get in Bali is. After Boston last year, I went to India for 2 weeks, and that was fantastic. Just great life experience. And you go to these places and you just sort of, you know, you realize how small running is, and it's great. These things really matter and your job matters, but there's a lot of stuff going on. And even within a build-up, I'm happy to, you know, like, I love live music. I'm going to fit in a concert, and it's okay if my run the next day is a little bit slower because I stayed out late. It's fine. And, you know, it's just balancing all of that. I think I'm super fortunate. My husband is an Ironman athlete, and every time I feel like I'm working hard or I'm trying to balance a lot, I look at him who is, he's works a full-time job, trains in the morning, and then we have this coffee company that he also, I mean, he'll take on all of it, and he just makes it work, and I'm like, oh, he works really hard. I think I can do a little more, too. And I think sometimes we look at each other, and we're like, oh, she's doing a lot. I should probably add more on my plate. That's why we take the long vacations.
So this side hustle that you and your husband started, mm-hmm. this entrepreneurial venture of coffee, you launched here in Boston before the marathon.
Yeah, pro tip, if you want to launch a company, do it the week before you win the Boston Marathon. And you'll be super busy. It was like kind of just sort of patched together maybe a month out, and we're like, we'll just see how it goes, it'll be fun, and we all love coffee, and it obviously blew up, and now we're like, well, this is an amazing opportunity. If you can have, you know, an athletic career has a timeline, and there's an endpoint, and then your career is over, and then what's next? If you can build something in the meantime with your name and likeness and your brand and make that last a lifetime, 100%, you take advantage of that, and you know, now you don't have to think about what's next when I'm done being a pro runner, and this is a natural transition. So,
there is another really interesting move that you did after winning the Boston Marathon. You decided to get a new coach.
Mm-hmm.
You had won under this coach, and you and I were talking beforehand about what a bold move this was.
Yeah,
that you know, at 34, that you've achieved success and instead of just sticking with what worked, you were looking for the next challenge. You wanted fresh eyes mm-hmm. to see how you could grow further in what you do.
Yeah, I think I was with the same coach for 13 years. And even as I got into this marathon, this Boston, I was probably more hands-on with my training and tweaking things and adjusting things more than ever before. And I felt like I was doing the same thing and getting the exact same result, and third, fourth, second, they're all really, really good, but what if I just tweak just a little bit? Could I win? And so being more hands-on this year was great, and then with the same coach, we got the ultimate prize, and it felt like the pinnacle. Like, what else could we possibly do together? It felt like, and it'll sound silly, because you've reached the top, why would you change anything? But it felt like the right time to make the turn, and you know, again, it's this thing, like, you don't want to go what if 10 years from now, and I have this opportunity to maybe find a little more progress, a little more speed, a little more turnover, maybe something else that will make me just a touch better, and now I can take these big risks because I have the highlight on my resume, which is a real thrill, and so crazy as it might seem, it was like, maybe we can get a little bit more in a different direction. Let's try that.
I just have two more things before I'm getting some signs that we want to turn it over to you to ask questions. But you have such a wonderful, authentic voice on social media. And there was one tweet that you did that I just love that I want to read, where it said, "Some days it just flows and I feel like I'm born to do this. Other days it feels like I'm trudging through hell. Every day, I make the choice to show up and see what I've got and to try to be better. My advice, keep showing up."
Yeah.
That's that's something that applies to so much more than than running.
Yeah. I feel like it really connected, you know, way more than I expected it to. And that was even prior to the win in Boston. But nothing's perfectly smooth. There's no perfect rise to the top. There's going to be the ups, there's going to be the downs. And I think a lot of times we start looking too far ahead and we think about, you know, in the marathon, it's you're at mile 15 and you feel tired and you're like, wow, I have so much more to go. And then it just gets worse and worse because you're thinking way too far down the road. And for me, that was don't think about any of that. And this was in training, but it was just stay right here, stay present, stay in the moment. Do what you can do now. And some days it's going to be great, some days it's going to be horrible, but if you do what you can do right now, that's it. That's all you can do. So show up for that. And then, you know, tomorrow, show up again and try again. And you can extend that to whatever part of your life you want. Sometimes like it's
being a mom.
100%. And some days the kids are, some days you're like, why, let's get rid of you. Yeah. That's why I'm not a mom. that's probably not allowed. They'd be hauling me off right now if I actually had children. But it is. It's like you question these things, but you can show up right now and you can be on your game for this thing and just try. And it might be great. It might be horrible, but you can try and see.
All right. I'm going to turn it over to the audience now. There are two microphones here if you want to come forward. And while we're waiting for people to queue up, I'm going to say, what's next?
Ooh.
Where, will we be rooting for you in Boston in 2019? Are the Olympics on your radar?
To be announced with Boston, I got my fingers crossed they invite me back. You know, that's what I've been saying. Yeah. So I would love to run here again. I'll be running here for many years in the future. And, you know, I'm taking it one race at a time. So 2020 would be amazing, but spring first.
Well, thank you, Des. Truly an honor to have you here today. And thank you, Linda, for a great conversation. So as mentioned, we have some microphones, and we'll start taking some questions. I just have one quick one before we do that. Dunkin' has recently, they have a new advertising campaign, and I don't know if anyone has seen it and heard it, but one of the ones on the radio says, you know, we know that one of the best days of the year is a Monday in April. And it's all about sort of a love affair for Boston. And so that tells you how we feel about the marathon right there. And so what is it like being back in Boston now that you are the champion of that Monday in April?
Yeah, it's so, so sweet. I do the thing where I pinch myself every time I'm here because I don't really believe it's real. I kind of feel like it's a Truman Show thing. I'm like, man, this is an elaborate set. So I hope it doesn't get taken away from me, but it is truly a dream come true, and it couldn't happen for me in a better city. Having debuted here, I thought, I'm made for this race, and I loved the course, I loved the crowds, I loved the people, I loved being here. And I know Shalane is from here, but I feel like this is home for me now. So sorry, guys, you're gonna have to root for me.
All right, so thank you. We'll gladly have you.
Thanks.
Why don't we start on this side and we'll just alternate and take as many as we can.
Sounds good. Ooh. So thank you so much. This was a really excellent panel. And one thing I just wanted to ask you was one of the things I find most inspiring about you and your story is how you talk about yourself. You don't seem to be afflicted by imposter syndrome, even a little bit. And I don't know if that's just a skill you've practiced or if that's just who you are, but after you won, I was watching live, as many Bostonians do, and crying. I cry at marathons and the Olympics and most things that involve the majesty of the human spirit. And they interviewed you after the race, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but the gist was, yeah, I worked harder than anyone else and I won. And I was like, I'm so glad that young women watching this are seeing that, because it was about you and your success and that you worked harder than anyone else. So how do we cultivate that in ourselves? Because that's awesome, and it's not something you see all the time.
I think I'm super lucky that I've slowly gotten to this role where I'm at. And, you know, I didn't get a sponsorship because I'm like the prettiest girl on the starting line. I worked for everything I've gotten in the sport, and I've kind of scrapped and fought for these opportunities, and being myself has always been what got me there. What I do is just keep being me and being really comfortable in my own skin and fighting for what I believe in. And I hope that that is a really great example for people watching. And I think there's a ton of people that are doing that as well. And it's just celebrating it and recognizing it and making sure that we put that in front of the next generation. So they have, if that's the model they want, it's there, and they recognize that it can be rewarded too.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I'm a runner, and I know that as a runner, one of the biggest challenges, it's not competing with others. It's that voice in your head that says, mm-hmm. you know, you have every excuse to stop now. You've got work or kids or commitments, or it's raining or it's snowing. And it's that fight against that voice for me. Most times I go out, once in a while, it's that I could do this forever, but you know, most of the time it's not. So when you ran Boston this year, right, we all watched. I was on the treadmill at the gym, my cozy warm gym, you know, running on a flat surface.
Thanks.
Being like, wow, I'm tired of 3 miles, and there they're going. What did you tell yourself? You know, you said when you started that you were kind of feeling like, hey, this maybe isn't my day. How did you get through those absolutely abhorrent conditions? And just what was that mantra you kept saying? And I'd love to learn from that in business and running and kind of take that back.
Yeah, I think I did at the beginning, I didn't think it was my day. And it was like, what can I do to help somebody else's day? And that was helping Shalane. And, you know, there was a point where Molly Huddle, the other American Hope, was out front leading the chase pack into the wind. I thought, that's the worst spot to be. What can I do for her? And sometimes it's just taking your eyes off of your own results and your own thing, and you're in service of others if you don't think that you're going to get the exact thing you want out of that day. And I think that helped me just kind of, one, forget how bad I was feeling because I'm doing something for someone else. And, you know, I stopped thinking about the end point. It was like, let's just do this now. In the process, I look back and I'm in third place and I'm like, oh my gosh, I dropped everybody. And then it was the mindset of like, you know what? Everybody's hurting right now. This is hard for everybody. There's challenges across the board for all people, and just make the most of this opportunity. You know, it was like, oh, it's not supposed to be easy. And so that mindset from there on in was like, okay, now just compete, and everybody's having a hard time. Be tougher than everybody else. That's kind of the thought process I was going through.
Awesome. Thank you. This side?
Hi. It's really incredible to hear that empathy has actually, in this circumstance, helped you achieve your goal. I've been reading about that recently.
Yeah.
I think that's just monumental. So it's great to hear that. I'm curious if you have a meditation or mindfulness practice that you use in your training.
Nothing super specific. My sister actually worked at Headspace for a long time, and so that was something that I was like, oh, this is very helpful. And she gave me the free app, and she was like, are you doing it? And I'm like, no. So I know there's a ton of value there, and I do. I mean, like, I visualize, and I certainly can take myself from agitated, irritated to calm through, you know, just learning how to relax and slow down the mind and the whole thing, but it's not within like a very dialed practice. I think Headspace is probably great. Like the app looked cool and the icons on there, and I'm like, I should probably be using this. And Andy Puddicombe's voice is just like, whew, like if you don't meditate, it'll for sure put you to sleep. So no, I think there's a ton of value in it, and I don't have anything specific, but I think it's great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of your work. And in 2011, I remember standing in my office with my hands over my head, jumping up and down with everybody else. And I just want to know what was going on in your head when you came around that corner and you only had a few meters left. What made you keep putting one foot in front of the other?
This year?
In 2011.
In 2011? I was supposed to win that race, you know. Like, I knew exactly what it was going to look like, and I mean, my calves just rebelled. They were like, "We're done. We're not part of this visualization thing. Like, we're stopping 200 meters shy. Sorry, lady." And my mind is like, no, pick up left foot, pick up right foot. And if you watch the tape, there's like legit a moment where you see me almost come to a stop and then is like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to finish today. And then you regroup and you go. But to me, it was like that. That's exactly how it was supposed to play out, minus that little glitch in there.
Congratulations on your
Thank
win.
You.
Congrats on your win. I'm actually training for my first Boston Marathon
awesome.
With Team Framingham. I've never run a marathon before. I'm that person that I try to just get there as fast as I can. What is your key piece of advice for learning to love the process and actually being able to pace yourself and just go with the flow?
Yeah, I think that goes to keep showing up. And I think it was Carol Dweck said, enthusiasm is common, endurance is rare. And you're going to get a bunch of people right now. Their entries come in and they get, that's Angela, that was from Grit actually. But, you know, they're going to be all excited and you're going to have a bunch of people on the paths because they're getting ready for Boston. And then it's going to, the weather's going to get worse and you're going to be tired and life's going to get busy, but keep showing up. And you'll be so happy you did on race day because the guarantee is it's going to be hard. And if you prepare, you'll have the ability to get through it. If you don't, I mean, it's not going to be super fun. So do the work now and just show up. And some days are going to be awesome. Some days are going to be horrible. And show up the next day and see if you can make it better.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, I have a question about injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm wondering what your experience is or your advice for dealing with some of the social or sort of emotional impacts of being injured when you're being a runner, an athlete is such a big part of your identity.
Yeah. I mean, I think having the things outside of running, that's when it's so important because, you know, you lose this big core part of your life. And if you don't have anything else going on, you spend your time thinking about the thing that you're missing. And so it's, in 2012, it was like, go back to the things that you don't get to do while you're running, like stay up a little bit late, go out with your friends, go to concerts, stuff that you're not really going to do while you're in the big training blocks. And it's okay to get a little bit out of shape. I think one of the things a lot of people try to do is cross train to stay really fit so that as soon as that injury heals, they're ready to go. I'm not saying this is the best tactic, but for me, it's like I cross train a little bit because I think that you should build the body back with, you know, like build the engine back with the chassis. You don't want one being ahead of the other. And if you're super cardiovascularly fit from working out and cross training, and then you're trying to get this injury back, sometimes you want to push it a little too hard because you can. But if you bring them all back together, it just makes it, the process a little bit all on the same page, and you can be a little bit more patient with it.
All right, I think we just have time for one more question, so you'll be our last. Thanks.
Good morning. My question is, what do you think about when you run? Because for a lot of people, running is their stress relief away from work.
Yeah.
For you, if running is your career,
mm-hmm.
just what, 26 miles, I mean, that would take me basically a year to finish. A couple hours. What do you think about for a couple hours when you go for a run?
Yeah, we're so connected all the time. We have our phones, we're on the internet and the whole thing. And to me, it's like, I think about everything. I think about nothing. It's super therapeutic. And there are times when you're in a workout and it's like, how does the body feel? Am I on pace? Is my breathing okay? And that's the job. And then there are times when you're in the middle of that same run, you're like, I wonder what I'm going to have for dinner. And you can do all of it and it's amazing. And so, you know, I think there's times where you can be dialed and there's times where you can just let your mind wander, and they're both really, really valuable. 26.2 miles on race day, you can't be hyper-focused for the whole time. Like, I just think it's this glycogen depletion that happens when you're, it's like paralysis by analysis. So you have to be able to relax and let the run just happen. And so that all happens out on the road. So take your earbuds out and try it.
Thank you.
Got it.
Wow, so thank you everyone for being here. Thank you again to Des and Linda.